The Navy sent me to treatment for alcoholism. So then that gave me permission to eat anytime I was awake. 5.5 years later, November 1986, my higher power, the Navy, once again sent me to treatment for chronic obesity, because at the time, the Navy believed it was a disease, not a moral issue, which it is today for the people in the military. And I was really grateful for that, because once again, it helped me to see I was powerless over that driving need to eat. So I got a sponsor. We worked the steps, and I was reluctant to do a fourth step. I finished the fourth step with my first sponsor. And then he called me up and he said, "Jerry, I have to let you go. I'm no longer abstinent." And I thought, "Wah!" Well, God has a sense of humor. One of the guys I was going to meetings with, I asked him to sponsor me. And he said, "Oh, no, you don't want me. You want my sponsor." So I said, "Okay." So I asked his sponsor, and he's no longer with us on earth, but he's still with me in spirit. His name was Terry, and I asked him to sponsor me, and he said, "Are you willing to go to any lengths?" And right away in my mind, I'm saying no, but what came out of my mouth was yes. So then he said, "Okay, you have to do at least 3 meetings a week. You need to call your food in every day, and you have reading and writing assignments." And I thought, "Oh, I got to get out of this." So I said to him, "Well, you know, I got to get up and go to work pretty early." And he said, "That's fine. Call me at 5:30 in the morning." So I'm really grateful, though, because I told him that I was really angry with God. God didn't do anything for me. And he said, "Don't worry about that. I'll give you a God you can do business with." I said, "Oh, yeah, what God is that?" He said, "Good order and discipline." And I thought, I'm a military guy. Maybe I can do that. So we got through the first 3 steps. I remember the second step. The first step, because we use the AA literature, it says in there, rapacious creditor, that's my disease. And I had to look that up, because anything I didn't understand, I couldn't ask him. I had to do the research. And so I had to look that up, and it meant all consuming. And I thought, yeah, my disease was all consuming. It meant nothing of me. And, you know, I'm really grateful to God, because God really took very good care of me, because I know I was a compulsive overeater from age 5 to when I got into OA when I was 38 years old. But between age 5 and probably 27, 28, God didn't allow it to show on my body. I don't know why that was, but God really took good care of me. But it started showing on my body, and the Navy started saying, not acceptable. So my methods of losing weight in the Navy before I got into OA was, first time I had to lose 40 pounds. So I just stopped eating for about 30 days. And then the weight came off, and they signed that little piece of paper that I made the weight. 2 years passed, and this time I had to lose 55 pounds. So I fasted for about 3 weeks, ate for about 3 days, fasted for another 3 weeks. And then I had like 1.5 pounds to lose. So I asked other guys in the Navy what they did. And one guy said, Just take a bottle of milk of magnesia. That ought to be good for a pound and a half. Well, I did, but it was only good for 3/4 of a pound because God has a sense of humor. So I went back and asked another guy in the Navy what to do, and he said, oh, just go out and run as far as you can. So I did. I ran about 15 miles, crawled over to a telephone booth, called my wife, had her come and pick me up. And then the next day when I weighed in, poof, I was that magical weight. And even before the ink was dry on that piece of paper, a friend of mine had given me a 5-pound box of chocolates, which I proceeded to reward myself with because there was no mental connection between what I put in my mouth would show up on my body. And when you eat with reckless abandon, not only do you get to gain back what you lost, but you get a little bonus. So 2 years passed again, and that's when I had to lose 60 pounds. And that's when the Navy sent me to treatment for chronic obesity. I got to say that in those years before treatment, I used to say to myself, I'm of no earthly value to my family, except for my life insurance policy. So I'm going to commit suicide, but I need my suicide to look like an accident. And I know that was just God's way of letting me be insane, so I didn't really take my life, but that's just the way I felt. I felt I had no earthly value. In treatment, it was probably the first time in my life I ever ate 3 meals, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. What a concept, right? And I couldn't believe it. And, you know, the nice thing about treatment was that there were other people there with me. And particularly, there was a lieutenant colonel from the Marine Corps there with me. And it just blew my mind. But once again, he didn't meet the weight standards, so they sent him to treatment. So once again, it just showed me that powerlessness, powerless over that driving need to eat. My first 7 years in recovery were honeymoon time. My second sponsor, the one who said, call me at 5:30 in the morning, he said to me one day, hey, Jerry, you know that men's meeting you go to? I said, yes. He said, do they have an intergroup rep? I said, no. Oh, and he said, they do now. So I'm at intergroup and they're talking about region 2. And I didn't have a clue what it was. And so I asked, well, what's region 2? And my sponsor said, oh, it just means that you get to come to intergroup and then you get to go to service board. So you'll be going to 2 service meetings a month. I go, okay, I could do that. Well, he didn't mention that I would get to go to 3 assemblies a year, okay? But I still remember the first assembly I went to, I met this young guy. Well, he was young compared to me because I was 38, and he was probably about 26, 27, okay, so young guy. And the amazing thing was, is he'd been abstinent over 8 years. And I thought to myself, it can be continuous. It can be. Thank you, God. So then after region, San Diego at the time had 130 groups. So we could send 13 delegates to World Service. And they needed some World Service delegates. And so my sponsor said, Jerry, how'd you like to go to World Service with me? I said, well, what's World Service about? Oh, he said, it's just like region. You get to do, you know, get to learn about bylaws and the organization. And so I said, yeah, okay, I can do that. It was either, I believe it was 1981 or 1992. I don't remember which year, but what I do remember is when I went to World Service, I met this guy, and he was about 330 pounds. And I looked at him, and I, you know, I guess he could kind of see the judgment in my face. And then he said, well, Jerry, I understand you might not know, you know, I've been in OA for 5 years and I'm still overweight. But what you don't know is I was 680 pounds when I came to OA. And that just blew my mind. And that helped me to see that I could no longer judge people by their body size. The other thing that when I was in treatment, what they did is they would bus us to meetings. And I ended up going to a meeting at a place called New Attitudes, which was a house for women with eating disorders. And, you know, like it was a brand new thing to me. And what I learned is that in OA, you can suffer from this disease, whether you're 680 pounds or you're 80 pounds. I met a young lady at New Attitudes, and we stayed in touch, you know, just communicating and stuff, saying hello and encouraging each other in recovery. And basically what happened is she broke her abstinence, and then she overdosed on heroin. And it was just a reminder to me that this disease is always out to kill us. And I'll steal a line from a friend of mine from the other program who says, cunning, baffling, powerful, and vindictive. It's always out to kill us. It'll kill us first spiritually, so then we don't care mentally or physically. You know, and I just, that just, still to this day, that's, you know, heavy on my heart. So at World Service, when I went, that was the year that they did the OA 12 steps. And I went with my sponsor, and my sponsor used to say, the reason they're doing the 12 steps first is because they couldn't agree on things. So they knew it would take a process. So then they did the 12 traditions the next year. But also, this was the year that Roseanne addressed the fellowship, and she said, my vision of OA was that it was only for compulsive overeaters. And then the World Service Business Conference spent the next 6 hours debating on how we're going to interpret Tradition 3. And what they came with was, you're a member if you say you are a member. The one thing that I really liked about the 12 steps of OA was, and it's on page 21 in the first edition. I don't know what page it's on today, but it goes there. Often we caused ourselves problems because we didn't realize that there were some kinds of eating we could handle comfortably and some kinds we couldn't. Many OAs have been able to identify certain eating behaviors or foods which tend to lead us into compulsive eating. Acceptance of these facts about ourselves gives us hope, for we know that by simply eliminating these eating behaviors and foods from our lives, we will experience fewer struggles with our disease. In OA, however, there's no list of foods and/or measurements or do's and don'ts which defines abstinence. We are individuals with our own individual nutrition needs, and we found that what is healthy choice for some of us might be lethal for others. And the reason I read that is that when I first came around OA, OA used what was called gray sheet, and OA was in danger of being sued by people who were actually getting sick on gray sheet. And so that's why they did away with food plans. But, you know, I found this out after, you know. But I'm grateful when I came around that I had to determine what were my alcoholic foods, the ones I abstained from. And then I needed to have a plan of eating, which for me was really simple. 3 meals a day. In the beginning, it was 3 meals and 2 snacks. However, the snacks became the most important thing in my life, so I had to surrender them. The following year, when I went back to World Service again, Roseanne addressed the fellowship again, and she said, "I just need everyone to know that my vision of OA was limited. God's vision of OA was unlimited, and it's for anybody who has an eating disorder." And I thought to myself, there was this little lady, she stood about 4'11". All of a sudden, she became a giant. But to be able to be that humble, it was just simply amazing. Anyway, I'm really glad that my sponsor really got me involved in service, and that was his thing. I'm really, really, truly grateful for that. Speaking of service, when I was on R2, there was this person there. Her name was Hannah, and at the time, Sherry was the chair. And me and Hannah were just like two kindergartners in her classroom. And she'd always say, "Okay, you kids, you got to separate so we can get OA's business done." Anyway, and that's what OA gave me, was the ability to laugh and have fun. Man, life is meant to be enjoyed. And, you know, I'm just so very, very grateful that God used my higher power at the time, which was the Navy, to get me here. And then my sponsors just really kind of loved me back to health. And I recently picked up this little acronym for recovery, and it goes resisting temptation, encouraging newcomers, call your sponsor, open your mind, remember you have value, everything God offers, repair relationships, and you're worth it, okay? And, you know, that's one of the things about being in recovery is that I learn all kinds of acronyms like HOPE, hearing other people's experiences, okay? Just so many things that are uplifting. And my sponsor, Terry, used to have me write love notes to myself. In the beginning, they were real simple. They went, "Dear Jerry, went to a meeting, love Jerry." The other thing was is that when I was in treatment, they used to have us stand in front of a mirror and say, "I love you." And I would do that, but I couldn't keep my eyes open. But after working the steps and doing those love notes with Terry, I was finally able to stand in front of the mirror, keep my eyes open, and say, I love you. So those simple love notes that Terry had me do, they got bigger over time. And I'll just read one to you. And it starts off with, I am the master of my thoughts. For today and throughout this year, I will let no one, including myself, try to make me feel shame or guilt about something I wish were different in myself. I stole that out of the For Today book, January 19th. I will endorse my weaknesses. I will thank God for my assets, strengths, and talents. I will address all my liabilities while remembering God is in charge of my life. I will have faith in myself that others have in me, and I become one of the top mentors in my life and the lives of those God puts into my life. I will be proud to call myself a loving child of God. I will pray to God to remove the shame and guilt and to add forgiveness for myself and all that I've harmed or hurt me, real or imagined, to my life as I learn each day to accept myself as I am. That is where I can begin to change and become the loving human being God intended me to be. Be kind and loving to yourself. Love, prayers, and hugs. I love you unconditionally, Jerry. And that all started with that little simple note. Dear Jerry, went to a meeting, love Jerry. I'm so very, very grateful to this program. It's helped me in more ways than one can imagine. And I need to tell you a little funny story. When I went back to the ship from treatment, you know, I was gone for 6 weeks. There was a new guy on board. And after about 2 weeks, he said to me, you know, Chief Jackson, you seem to be a pretty nice guy to me. I don't know why everybody in here is afraid of you. So I had to chuckle and say to myself, wow, things have changed. But, you know, before treatment, I was always, you know, no other way to put it, beating people up with words, you know, to make them do what I wanted them to do. But thanks to my sponsor in the seventh step and to my daughter, who was about 13 years old, and I was barking orders at her one day, and she said, I just need you to know, Dad, I'm not one of those sailors that works for you. You need to ask me nicely. And thanks to the seventh step in the AA 12 and 12, where it says, anyone can tell the difference between a demand and a request. And thanks to this program, I've learned to request things from people. Just so very. And, you know, I also request things from myself. Okay, Jerry, let's pray. One of the new things that I've picked up recently is the two P's. The first one is to pause, and the second one is to pray. When I do the two P's, I don't get in trouble with my wife or my children or other people. But when I don't pause, sometimes my mouth gets me into trouble. I know probably no one can relate with that, but when I do the two P's, things are extremely pleasant. The other thing I learned in OA is that I need to be vigilant, and I need to remember that my disease never rests, okay? And so I need to stay plugged in and connected. Basically, like I said, my first 7, 8 years was like a honeymoon. And then, of course, because I am Jerry, I have to blame the Navy. The Navy transferred me from San Diego to North Fork, Virginia. And so because I got sent there and, you know, my wife and daughter at the time, we had a little discussion about me going there, and they came up with, just because you have a job that lets you go to exotic places doesn't mean we need to go with you. So, yes, I went to Virginia by myself. And, well, poor Jerry, I don't have my support group, boo, 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 hoo. So for about a year, I didn't do very many meetings. And, of course, that gave me the excuse to not be abstinent. And then I retired from the Navy and came back to San Diego and got me a sponsor. And like I said, I was on and off for a while, but June 16, 2001, with this sponsor I got, who really started helping me to love myself again. And we worked the steps. And, you know, when we got to the fourth step, some things came up that never came up before. And my sponsor said to me, the reason they didn't come up before was God knew you weren't healthy enough to handle it. He needed to wait until you were healthy enough to handle it. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. Oh, and I wanted to get back to when I did the third step with Terry. That's when I found a God that was bigger and greater than anything in my life. And I was no longer angry or mad at God, because I could see how God always took care of me in spite of me. And so that's the God I have today. The other thing that I learned from OA was I really need to learn to take care of myself. And one of the ways I do that was I had to learn to stand up for the truth and God's will, not Jerry's will. And one other thing. 85% of the time, it's not so much what I've done or do as much as I did not stand up for myself and say, you have no right to treat me that way. Before OA, I just thought I was a piece of dog doo-doo and you could just kick me around and, you know, and I just needed to take it. In OA, what I learned is stop. I don't want to hear that. If you need to tell somebody about it, fine, tell somebody about it, but you're not going to tell me. Just that ability to stand up for myself. Oh, wow. And, you know, I was in my 40s. Imagine that. One other thing I'll share with you about my recovery. In the other program, there was a lady who asked me to sponsor her. And so I said to Terry, is it okay to sponsor her or not? And he said, is your motivation to help her work the steps? Or is your motivation something else? So if it's something else, you need to say no. And if it's to help her work the steps, you can say yes. So I was sponsoring her, and we got to the fourth step, and we were in Balboa Park, and she was sharing it. And what she shared was is that she felt ashamed for being Black. And I thought to myself, I felt the same way for over 40 years, but I never expressed it to anyone. And I could see that this was God's way of healing us both, to say, we're just that loving child of God that God created, okay? Such a loving, kind thing that happened. And, you know, today I love myself exactly as I am. I'm proud of who I am. I'm proud of my heritage. And that's just thanks to God, you know, and that's what I always remember. God's bigger and greater than anything in my life. And I need to just keep on keeping on. I'll tell you a little thing about when I got to the sixth step and I had my assignments from Terry, and he always said, three strikes, you're out. So this was my second strike. I called him up and I said, I didn't do my assignment. And he said, why? And I said, I'm not willing. And he said, screw the willingness. Get the assignment done and call me back. Wow, just what I needed. So I did the assignment, and you know, thanks to Terry and God, I know that the steps are God's way to help me surrender. Things don't work in recovery. Things that aren't based on spiritual principles. Just really, truly blessed. And, you know, the thing I also know is that I'll be honest, I love going to Region 2 and World Service for the debates, okay? I remember, you know, when we were doing the OA 12 steps for the OA 12, one of the guys, he was adamant about A 12 and 12 was good enough for me. It should be good enough for anybody coming to OA. And all I could think about was, wow. Thank God I'm not that resistant to change. And, you know, the thing is that somebody I sponsored that we keep in touch with over the years, probably been about 20 or so. I don't sponsor him anymore, but we still connect and do things. And we were talking the other day about change, and that's the only thing that's certain in life is change. So you can either get on board with it or you can be miserable with it. Your choice. And that's the other thing I learned is that I'm grateful to a member in the other fellowship that taught me to be grateful. And what I do today is I start my day off with at least three gratitudes. And the first one is, I'm grateful to be alive. The second one is, I'm grateful to be sober and abstinent. And the third one is, I'm grateful for my family and my friends that I wouldn't have had without the 12 steps. The other thing I know for sure is that it's definitely a we program. We do it together. I do remember that, you know, being bused to meetings was helpful, but it got me to where I knew that it's okay to go to meetings with other people. And early in my recovery, we did that a lot. And then, thanks to my sponsor, who told me that there were some people who didn't have cars, who needed rides, and I gave them your name and phone number, so if they call you, make sure you take them to the meeting. And all I could remember is that when I pick this lady up and we go to the meeting, and then I take her home after the meeting, that smile of gratitude she had just amazed me. And I knew that was God's way of blessing us both. The other thing I know for sure is one of the things that really helped me understand that it was a disease was when I came around, the OA literature they had was the Brown Book, and I used to nickname it the Chocolate Book because I gotta be me. And in the third edition, the new one, they moved Appendix A to Appendix B. And the thing that really helped me to understand it was the disease was these paragraphs. The remarkable thing about OA success is that the program gets people to function far better than they ever have in their lives. With any other disease, you're lucky to get back to where you were. If you had a heart attack, for example, you're fortunate to get your heart to function as well as it did before the attack. With a compulsive overeater, not only do you get back to a normal weight, but more importantly, your life has changed. And in a sense, you're ahead of where you were before you became a compulsive eater. Now you have the tools of feeling, touching, caring, loving, sharing, being honest with your family, and looking at life in an understanding way, and not fighting it, but going along with it. Once you treat the illness, you have the potential to be a more together person than you were. Therefore, it is exciting for physicians and others who've been ignoring the problem or expressing deep pessimism about it to think of compulsive overeating as a disease and to realize it can be treated so successfully. And, you know, one of the service positions I had was I was on the retreat committee. And I worked there with a young lady, Lois, and we weren't quite like Hannah and Jerry. We were like bitter enemies. Anyway, Virgil, he was the retreat chair. Okay. And man, he just really helped us. What he would say is that, okay, you guys need to put your arguments on the back burner for now and get your service positions done, okay? But we were like on the retreat committee for at least a year before we acknowledged that you're entitled to feel the way you feel and I'm entitled to feel the way I feel. And wow, we learned to get around. But Virgil, he didn't take any stuff from us, okay? And that was really great.
In 10 minutes.
Okay, thank you. I was looking for, one of the things we used to read at the retreat was out of AA Comes of Age. It's on page 265. And it goes, real prayer is not telling God what we want. It is putting ourselves at his disposal so he can tell us what he wants. Prayer is not trying to get God to change his will. It is trying to find out what his will is to align ourselves or realign ourselves with his purpose for the world and for us. That's why it's important for us to listen as well as talk when we pray. That is why it is good to begin these meetings with silence. Oftentimes, we come feverishly and willfully, and we just have to quiet down before God can do anything with us. While our own voices are clamorous and demanding, there's no place for the voice of God. That is the thing most of us non-alcoholics get drunk on, just willfulness, just wanting life on life's terms. And it is neurotic as any neurosis ever. That just really helps me to be in the mindset that I need to be available for what God would have me do instead of what Jerry would have me do. I have a very loving relationship with my daughter, and that's thanks to OA. When she was 17, she said to me, you know, she asked me about a boy, and I said, follow your heart. She also said to me, hey, Dad, what do you think about me going into the military? And this was one of the times when I didn't pause. And I said, over my dead body. She said, why is that, Dad? And I said, unfortunately, the military does not treat women fairly. And you know, she didn't go into the military. Thank you for that. But I told her I wanted her to be a doctor. And so basically when she was in college, she was in pre-med. And when she had to cut the frogs up, she learned that she can't handle blood. So she said, well, Dad, I'm not going to be a doctor. Is that okay? And I said, well, find something that makes you happy. So my daughter became a psychologist. So she's still a doctor, okay? So I remind her whenever we don't always see eye to eye that I thank God that you became the doctor I wanted you to be. Me and my son, you know, like when he was 16, my son stands about 6'1" and a half, and I'm about 5'7" and a half. And I remember we were discussing, you know, I'll admit that I'm not always sane, okay? But he was 16, and we were discussing about him going to R-rated movies. And I said to him, you don't go to those movies without my permission. So he jumped up from the table. I jumped up from the table. All I could think about is I've definitely lost my physical advantage. I'm not going to lose the psychological one. So I said, sit down. But, you know, the thing is that, you know, how crazy was that we could have that discussion, right? And disagree and, you know that it's okay. You know, my son told me, I'm not going to be anything like you, Dad. So, of course, he went in the Army because I was in the Navy. And I worked for the federal government. And he now works for the federal government. When he got out of the Army, I couldn't wait to say to him, guess what? You're just like me. You're another veteran. Anyway, God has always been blessing me. You know, my children are healthy. I have a beautiful granddaughter that's 17. And when she was like 12 or 13, we went to Balboa Park, okay? And me and her were skipping, just having fun, right? And her parents said to me, "Why don't you act like you're grown up?" And all I could think to myself was, man, they're sticks in the muds the way I used to be. And today, I don't have to be a stick in the mud. And I'm not responsible for anybody's behavior but mine. And my job is to love myself so that I can pass that love on to others. My job is to remember that it's a we program. I can't do it by myself. I always needed Hannah's help when I was at Region, okay? And here's a funny thing, okay? I was the R2 treasurer. And you know what I knew about money and stuff? But I got to learn, and I had good people to teach me. The one thing I know for sure is that for me, I have a happy life today. And it all started by eating 3 meals a day and remembering that it was a disease, not a moral issue. And the for today, greatest piece of literature ever written, okay? And it always helped me. And one of the days that really helped me was December 21st, which was 10 days after my daughter's birthday. And I also went to a staying abstinent over the holidays workshop. And at the workshop, I said to the person, "Well, what do I do for my daughter's birthday when they're having cake?" And she said, "You could have fruit." What a concept! I could choose to eat something other than cake? Wow. Anyway, December 21st, exuberance is beauty. William Blake. Western culture seems to squelch exuberance. As children, most of us are required to conform to a fairly rigid standard of good conduct in the classroom and at home. Mustn't be too expressive, too joyous. It's discomforting to the grown-up person in charge. Soon the children, taking their cue from authority, begin to make fun of too much displeasure, too much unrestraint show of how good it feels to be alive in this beautiful world. How does a grown human learn to express exuberance? Perhaps it's not possible to retrieve what was once lost. But this program of recovery comes close. The more I practice being as a child, especially when I take steps 3 and 11, the more my spirit is seized with an untamed joy demanding expression. For today, I am not afraid to enjoy what is beautiful, nor to express my exuberance in whatever way occurs to me. And, you know, the thing I know today is, like it says in the book, we absolutely insist on having fun. And we get to do that together by surrendering excess food and, for me, my alcoholic foods. So then I get to have pretty much a normal life. What I know today is that I'm just so very grateful that God is my higher power and that God has always been there for me, no matter what. Even though there were times when I didn't think God was, but God was always there for me. And as I, you know, look at things today where they put people, they discharge people from the military if they don't make the weight standards. And they didn't do that when I was in. They sent me to treatment. And so I just remind myself how truly blessed I was and how much God always looked out for me, no matter what. And, you know, one other thing I'll say is that when I was in treatment, my wife and daughter came and picked me up because they gave us weekends off after 3 weeks. And this guy gave me a hug at the door. And my daughter said, I don't remember, she was maybe 8 or 9 at the time. She said, Daddy, why did that guy hug you? And I said, because we're brothers of the OA program. And she said, okay. But, you know, like, to be able to hug. And I'll close with this, that when Terry was my sponsor, I told him that when I was 13 at my father's funeral, I was crying. And this man told me, you're a man now, don't cry. But I just couldn't stop crying. But I didn't cry from that day on until I got into the OA program. And I shared that with my sponsor. And my sponsor shared with me, tears is what God gave us to express feelings we don't have words for. And so today I know I'm allowed to cry. And that was just another gift from the program. And I'll close with, keep coming back. And if you have any problems, just call Hannah and tell her Jerry said to call. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Jerry. That was wonderful. Really appreciate it.